I love you. Always have. I want to marry you.
And I you. You and no other.
I came back home to raise crops and a family. If I can live in peace, I will.
We will be more merciful than they have been. We'll spare the women and the children. For all else, no mercy.
I want this Wallace's heart on a plate.
Where are you going?
I'm going to pick a fight.
Well, you didn't get dressed up for nothing.
Go back to England and tell them Scotland is free.
This one will fight forever.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
Every man dies. Not every man really lives.
That's what happens when you send a woman.
This poor woman was trying her best, and I knew that that line was coming.
Yep. It's like, you have the gold. No, I gave it. I think that's actually what sends him into his deathbed.
He was early grave, yeah.
He was fine. And then once he said that, he started like laughing and coughing. And I was like, oh, that just killed him right there. This woman giving away his gold.
Yeah, that was the beginning of the end for the king.
On the path here, Oscar month rolls on with 1995's Best Picture winner, Braveheart.
Yeah, 95. Wow, what a year. I was 2 years old.
You were 2 years old. We will get into what this beat, because there's one movie that it beat out that I definitely think was better than this. And we'll get into it. But make sure you stick around towards the stick around the end of the episode. We'll tell you what we're going to cover next week. We are taking a little break from Oscar month for a Brett Day pick because it's my birthday.
Yay.
So, yeah, we'll pick one. It'll be near and dear and relevant, especially to what may be happening for my birthday. Make sure you check out our Patreon episode of the month, American Beauty, 1999's Best Picture winner, as well as everything else beyond there. Patreon.com/onthepath. Email us podonthepath@gmail.com. Check out Discord. All links below. Here we go. Oh, yeah, rate and review as well, wherever you listen. That helps. Okay, so here we go. Let's guess the gross here. Budget of 65 to 70 million. They couldn't really narrow it down. So 65 to 70 million, 1995. What did the Best Picture winner gross?
Wow. I was expecting more of a budget. Just when I was watching this film earlier today, I was thinking about just like the vast amount of people that were there and how it probably wasn't CGI. And there were so many people, so many horses, so many costumes. I thought the budget's going to be high. That's pretty high, but it's lower than I expected.
Yeah, they used a bunch of fake horses, a little bit of fake weapons. And did you see where most of this was filmed? Almost entirely.
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
It was almost entirely filmed almost entirely in Ireland.
I could have guessed that, really. I should have guessed it. Yeah. Those rolling hills. Yeah.
Looked very Irish.
There's loads of filming that happens in Ireland and Northern Ireland, especially now with Game of Thrones was a massive thing for Northern Irish film and television industry. And it just keeps going now, which is great to see. But anyway, I digress. I think this film would have raked it in. People would have lapped this shit up. I'm going to 300
million. 213.2
million. That's all right.
It is, but then you have to think about this. And maybe I should have said this, maybe give you kind of a hint or something like that. This is a 3 hour movie in 1995. So 1995's prices along with 3 hours means you're getting in probably one less viewing than you would even a 2.5 hour, maybe about 2 hour and 15 minute movie as well.
Very true. Yeah. I wonder if they had intervals at this time in the cinemas.
The only movie I can ever remember having an intermission for was this movie, the Civil War movie called Gods and Generals. And because that thing was like pushing 4 hours.
Wow.
And that's the only one I can remember, but I swear there's another one that I saw. But I've only ever seen them for movies that were basically almost like mini series that they put in. Basically like 4 hour movies. If it was 3 hours, a little bit more than 3 hours, you're going straight through that thing.
I've been in the cinema once when they had an intermission, and it was for the last, well, not the last, but the last of that kind of trilogy, Pirates of the Caribbean film.
Oh my God, they had an intermission?
Yeah, yeah. And I remember thinking, this is really weird. I don't think that film was 3 hours or at over 3 hours. World's End, I know it right? was long. Yes, at World's End.
Yeah, that was 2 hours and 48 minutes.
Okay, well, the little cinema in my hometown thought that we needed a break from that.
It was just the movie, not the length. It's just like, they've had enough. Give them a break. That might be a little bit of torture worse than what old Billy Boy here got at the end. But okay, let's get the let's tomato meter motto.
Oh yeah, so let me tell you what the critics thought of this film. Distractingly violent and historically dodgy, Mel Gibson's Braveheart justifies its epic length by delivering enough sweeping action, drama, and romance to match its ambition.
I'm just going to be quick. I'm not going to think about it. 84.
Oh, okay. Well, that's for the critics, right?
Yeah, critics.
127 critics rated this on average at 76%.
76, okay.
Still certified fresh.
It is, but it feels if it's under 80, it is low for a Best Picture winner.
Very true. Yeah, wow. Very true. Yeah, and the audience, there's over 250,000 audience members reviewing this one.
Audiences, I think, liked it more. I do know that a lot of Scottish people did not like it because of what they did to Robert the Bruce. But I'm going to say this is going to be 84. I'm going to stick with it.
Okay. The audience scored at 85.
God, dude! I'm
gonna get it one day.
I am dancing around both of them. Oh man,
that was a very good guess.
Okay,
very
good. I'm getting on in there. Okay, there you go. So 70s for the critics, 80s for the audience. All right, with that, let's get in it. Let's get in 1995's Braveheart, directed by, as we mentioned last week, noted racist Mel Gibson. Noticed doesn't believe in or doesn't. Agree, not agree, was it recognized like Vatican II? He's like that kind of Catholic. He is hardcore Catholic.
Oh wow! Okay, I didn't know that about him.
That's why him and Mark Wahlberg are like tight because they're both just crazy. Not all Catholics are crazy, but there are crazy Catholics, and those two are crazy Catholics.
Okay, so they bond over that. I get it.
Yeah, they bond over that. No, he had some terrible audio coming out with his ex-wife that I told you about. Off mic, I did not say the actual words of what he said, but basically saying he wanted her to be assaulted by racial epithets of blah, blah, blah.
God.
Yeah, and other things, a lot of anti-Semitic stuff, which again is like wild because, you know, Hollywood in that sense with so much. But he is someone who was, if you want to say canceled before, like he was so bad that he pretty
like
much.
The original cancel.
Yes, and this was after The Passion. You've heard of the movie The Passion, right?
Of the Christ?
Yeah, the movie, The Passion, the movie he did?
Yes.
Okay, so he did that movie, and all this stuff came out after that. And so he kind of went away in that 2007, I want to say, or something like that, Apocalypto came out, and people were like, I never saw it. But I've heard from so many people, even people that hate Mel Gibson, are like, that's a great movie.
Apocalypto, yeah.
Yeah, and like he directed it, and they were like, this is incredible. Look, he's still talented, blah, blah, blah. And he's kind of come back. I know he was in, I think it was it Daddy's Home 2 with Mark Wahlberg? I think he was playing Mark Wahlberg's dad, which
that's
was
right. Yeah.
Like perfect casting right there. Like, y'all can both channel your former racist things together to bond over this character.
Yes, I totally didn't recognize him in that film. I was trying to think, where have I seen Mel Gibson before? And it's that. It's fucking Daddy's Home 2.
Yeah, I don't like anything that he's done afterwards. And it's not just because of that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you can go back and watch stuff. Mel Gibson from the 80s and 90s, Lethal Weapon, the movie Maverick, like, the dude was so well-liked in all around Hollywood. That's kind of why he got to still, I think, be around, was everyone generally liked him. And they're like, okay, he can lay low for a little bit and then come back. But to me, I didn't really see it in this movie because that Scottish accent that he's trying to do just completely betrayed his whole fucking character for me. Betrayed his performance.
Yeah, the accents were wild in this film. Some people like did really well, and then even Mel Gibson himself had lines where I think, oh wow, he really nailed that line. That line sounded good, but then it was just too inconsistent for me to be able to think it believable.
I think when you're trying to really show the passion in the yelling is when it's hard to do it. And whenever when he lost it, to like when he's riding out talking about like yelling, it's just like, dude, no, you don't have it. And it, especially at the end of his words. And to that, it's just, what if he would have just done this as Mel Gibson, and I don't know, maybe just a little twang, I think it would have been a lot better, because it just, I couldn't get over
Couldn't get over the accent.
I couldn't get over it. Well, because it was just wasn't there. Like you said, it was there. It just left whenever he kind of couldn't do it. And then it came back whenever. And I don't know, just, it wasn't good, but it wasn't distractingly bad. It wasn't Nicolas Cage, Captain Curly's mandolin bad, but yeah. Nothing will ever be that bad, I guess.
I did think it was fine. Yeah, I could get over it for the sake of the movie.
Yeah, my mouse is messing up again. Okay, I have to go real slow with it. Okay, this was written by Randall Wallace. From what I've gathered, is no relation, but he has written some other historical movies too.
Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, he wrote Pearl Harbor in there. I don't think
he was nominated for a Razzie for that one.
Was he really? Did he do Kingdom of Heaven?
No.
Okay, I can't remember who did Kingdom of Heaven. It was somebody along those lines, because Ridley Scott directed that one, but it wasn't. But okay, so this one, Best Picture for 1995, and it beat out what I feel 100% should have won, to me, and almost better than this movie in every way, Apollo 13.
Okay, I haven't seen that.
Apollo 13 was directed by Ron Howard, which is weird because I usually don't care for his directing because it's so basic. But Apollo 13 is about the mission of Apollo 13, which was two after 11s would landed on the moon. And it was called, I can't remember if it's called the successful failure or the failed success or something like that, where they're supposed to go walk on the moon and then something goes fucking terribly wrong and they're stranded out there in space. And they're like, we cannot get them home.
This is real life story?
Oh yeah, real life. Oh yeah. Wow. Now I don't know how much of it is exactly real, like what they do, because they do something that apparently is like impossible. Like they have to invent something. Like the biggest scene that sticks out to me is they're like, we need to get from here to here with only this amount of equipment. Like we need to make this with just this on there. And they spend all this time. Then they tell them how to do it. And it's literally just mission control and then three people in a tiny little lunar module kind of thing. And it's riveting.
Oh, I think I would like that. I think I would enjoy that. Yeah.
It's Ed Harris. Dude, Ed Harris, I think, got nominated. If my fucking piece of shit would scroll down, I could go look.
Would you want me to Google?
No, Ed Harris was nominated for supporting actor. But
he didn't win?
No, he didn't, because guess who won supporting actor for The Usual Suspects?
Oh,
Kevin Spacey.
Know. Oh.
This was Kevin Spacey's first Oscar right here. So he won it. But yeah, this won Best Picture, Mel Gibson as a producer. It also won Best Director for Mel Gibson.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, I know. And we'll get into it. This would be a really good episode, I think, because I think we are on polar opposites of this movie.
Yeah, we try not to talk too much about the film before we start recording.
Yeah.
But I kind of let slip how I felt about the film, and I was messaging Brett whilst I was watching it, and I think it's clear how I feel about it.
Yeah, and even like right before we talked about it. Okay, so, all right, let's get going with it right. Oh my God, this fucking mouse. Okay, we're good. Let's get going with it right here. Scotland 1280, all right?
Yep.
This Scottish nobles are to meet with the cruel pagan king, Edward I, Longshanks, okay. And here's the thing. I am going to talk about history in there and just say a little bit in there. It's whatever. I will judge this based on the movie and not based on the history in that. But with something like this, I think it's important to show that by them calling him a pagan is basically you're seeing like what this is about. That this is like a propagandized from the Scottish point of view. And most of what this comes from is this account from a guy named Blind Harry, okay? And let's see if I can butcher this. This book or whatever you want to call it, writing down. The Actus in Dietis and Illustri e Valiant Champion Sheer William Wallace. Okay. It was this account of William Wallace's life written 172 years after his death.
That sounded like you were reading something from Scottish Twitter.
Yeah. I should have got Scottish Twitter's review of Braveheart.
Yeah. I mean, I want to preface our podcast by saying, I went into this movie having no idea what it's about. Okay. I knew it was about Scotland. That's it. I'm not bound at all by the knowledge of history in this. So I was just like, sure, he's a pagan king. Sure, I don't know who this guy is.
It's a pagan king. And I mentioned at the end of last episode, and we teased this. This was a highly, highly, probably the most influential movie maybe of my entire life. Because I watched this when I was 11 years old, and it got me into medieval history, where eventually my degree would be and everything like that. My first online name handle on that, like AOL 2.0, AOL 3.0, was Longshanks.
Oh, cool.
I know. So I watched this.
You were rooting for the English and the French.
Back then, I would have an English thing. Now I'm like, hell yeah, killing English people. Mel Gibson may be a crazy ass racist, but goddamn does he like to kill English people in his movies. Because also check out the 1999's The Patriots about the Revolutionary War. Yeah, redoes that. And so, yeah, I got like Longshanks out of that because Edward I, actual king, his nickname was actually Longshanks, like long legs, because by all accounts, he was about 6'1", 6'2".
Oh, that's pretty tall for back then, right?
It's pretty tall for back then, and it's basically my height now. So I was like, hey, you know, especially when I got into high school, when I actually got up to a full, you know, that I was like, oh, that's perfect that he had in there. You may know, or a lot of people in England may know, the Charing Cross Station in London. Okay, that was one of the Eleanor's crosses. So his wife was Eleanor of Castile. And contrary to this movie here, like where he does, I guess he doesn't interact with his wife. He's just a complete asshole. He actually like loved her. Like they loved each other. And it was King Edward I and Eleanor of Castile, like legit loved each other. Went everywhere. I want to say that maybe she even went on crusade with him or something like that. Like they genuinely, by all accounts, like enjoyed each other all the time. And when she died, he erected 12 crosses that carried her body from, I think it started in like Sheffield all the way to London. And one of them is a Charing Cross and you can like see there.
Oh, I can't even think where Charing Cross is. But yeah, there's loads of that name comes up a lot of like something cross.
Yeah, Charing Cross should be the one right there by Piccadilly. Not Piccadilly. Fuck, it's where I was. Trafalgar Square.
Yes, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, it's like that main one there, Trafalgar. And so, yeah, so the pagan king there was interested. And so much of this is I watch it. I'm like, oh, my God, medieval history. And so, again, I look at it because then, oh, look, we have shit-covered peasants that just, again, they're shit-covered. They're covered in dirt like this whole time. And it's just, no, again, I've said that enough. That's not how it was. They also, it's really weird that they did certain things in here. And this was also like almost a people's telling of William Wallace. They say William is a commoner. And William Wallace was not a commoner. He was a noble because commoners did not fucking lead shit back then unless you were Joan of Arc and just completely random in that sense. So he wasn't really a commoner, which I thought was funny too. It's because they're trying to make him like this nobody, and he got raised by Brian Cox, that Argyle guy, but the dude's speaking Latin, he's speaking French, and it's one of those Scottish commoners that's fluent in Latin and French,
and he does a bit of Italian as well.
Oh, did he?
Yes, whenever he tells her that he went to Rome, he does just one line of Italian. So I was like, oh my God, I didn't think people were this trilingual back in the day.
No, I mean, if you were a noble in that sense, Latin definitely. You know, I can see somewhat, not always, but you would like Latin would be it, and then whatever your local one is.
Most of this whole story is all about him not being a noble and being so against the nobles, but that's interesting that he wasn't really.
No, he wasn't at all. And he was an actual knight, and they knight him in this as well. But I think it just had to do with, because I didn't really remember this, because I haven't seen this movie in over 20 years. Like, I probably have not seen it since maybe high school, maybe early college. So it has been well over 20 years since I saw it. And I'd forgotten of how much of it was this. What's it called? The jocks versus snobs or something, or rich people versus snobs or poor versus snobs. You know, I was thinking that right there. It's what it was, because this whole time, it's like the nobles are a thorn in his side every bit as much as the English.
Yes. Yeah. It almost becomes like his second enemy towards the end as well.
Yeah. And that was a thing too. I think that was an actual thing also, was the Scottish infighting amongst the clans, because it was the same. It was like, well, we kind of have everything okay with the English. You know, like if we go fight and then this other guy that we don't like is going to be king, and I don't give a shit that he's Scottish because he's a rival clan. And another thing that hit up here is at this time in medieval, there was no notion of like nations or countries that we know them today. Like he keeps saying that, like our own country, all that. I'm like, that's not how it fucking worked. Like it was people. And like the first French king that was like king of France instead of king of the Franks was basically like the 1200s. Like that was, so before then, even it was just like the Franks. And so it was like, you're the king of the people, you're beholden to a king and then your own type of people. It wasn't like, oh, Scotland, this and this country and all that stuff.
And
that's
borders
a little bit.
And the actual land. And
borders were malleable. It was basically, it's out to here, but if we can't control it and nobody's there, it doesn't fucking matter.
Can't stop people from taking it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I did like that line though. I did like one where he said, he told Robert the Bruce that it didn't matter. Like the people follow him It didn't matter if he was a noble. You know, they were like, people are going to follow you because you're a leader, not because of title, blah, 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 and all that. And I did like that, because so much often than not, whoever had the army is going to be in charge. You know, like, this person is the king because these lesser nobles allow it. And he has, the king has enough to be like, okay, my army is this. They say I'm king. The minute he doesn't have an army to say he's king, somebody else is going to be king.
Exactly. Yeah. I think I always think of that line from Game of Thrones where Cersei's like, no, power is power.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love
no,
that.
It is.
When she
yeah.
tells all of her guards, like, step back, turn around, and Littlefinger's just sat shaking in his boots.
No, that was great. And so was when they were trying to make the play after Robert died. And they were like, Renly was like, I want to be king. Like, you can't be king. You're not the firstborn. He's like, I got a big ass fucking army that's telling me I can be king. Like, you only have your birthright. If nobody cares, then your birthright is shit.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I'm so excited for House of the Dragon.
That's summer, right? Have they set a date? It is June.
I don't think we've got a date, but we know it's June.
We've got Fallout next month.
So we are being fed.
House of the Dragon, amongst other things coming up. All right. How about a nice little J.R. Mormont sighting? Speaking of Game of Thrones.
Oh my God, I missed that.
James Cosmo. You didn't recognize him?
No,
oh,
who's
it looks
that?
Exactly the same. Brendan Gleeson's dad.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, it looked just like him as soon as I saw him.
Oh, my God. Yes, of course.
Yeah, the old bear himself.
Yes. Oh, I didn't even recognize him in this film.
Yeah, I saw him. I forgot the name, though. I was like, wait, Jorah Mormont. Wait, no, he's not Jorah. That's not Jorah.
No, he's Jorah's dad, right?
Yeah, that's old Jaor. So pretty much almost everybody is Scottish. At least I looked up the main people, except Brendan Gleeson, who is. He's Irish. He's Irish playing the Scotsman. And then I have, where's he coming down later? The Scottish guy. David O'Hara was the Irish guy, I should say.
Yeah.
So that's the guy playing Stephen the Irishman. He's Scottish. Kind of weird, you know, that they couldn't find any Irishman.
No Irish actors at all.
There was no Irish actor that could have stepped up to the plate here in the mid-90s to play this lunatic.
It was so funny when his character comes in and he's just an Irishman. I was like, okay, we have an Irishman. And then he's suddenly mental. I was like, oh, hey, brilliant.
Hey, no, the perfect,
of course he is.
The perfect response was Edward the First when they turn in the Battle of Falkirk and he just goes, Irish.
Yeah. I loved it. I loved it so much.
Yeah. So what do you think of the representation, huh? There's an Irish representation, this fucking madman.
Mad Men, and I was getting really sad during that scene because I thought we were about to see the Scottish and the Irish absolutely rip into each other.
Yeah.
I was so happy when they started shaking hands and showing their cock and balls.
Yeah, and that's another thing too. As I'm watching it, I'm just like, okay.
So stupid.
One guy got shot in the ass for his troubles.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, what if you're gonna be? How awesome would that be though? If you were that extra, you're like, "Hey, I'm the extra who got shot in the ass. So
I'm the ass guy.
I'm
yeah.
the only one. You'll know that that's me. How will I see you? Just look for the guy that gets shot in the ass. Hey, that's me.
Look, yeah.
That's my prosthetic ass. It took me 2 hours of makeup to do it. All right. So the main thing is we get this almost like a little prologue of young William Wallace, and this kid is just Scottish, like Scottish out here.
Oh,
I want to
get
with you. Yeah, with you, brave.
He's so sweet. I thought he was really good,
Dad.
This little kid.
Did you really? He's
yeah,
too,
I actually did.
Too precocious for me.
What
just
do you mean?
Too precocious, too. Like, I want to go with you, Dad. You know, I'm not going to do that, but then like, I want to go here. I want to see.
Hey. Giving you like young Anakin Skywalker vibes.
Yes, yes. And yeah, he had the little braids. Yeah.
I thought he was so sweet.
Yeah. And then I liked his, I liked when he got hit, when he got punched by young Haymitch.
He gets punched so many times in this film.
Yeah, so we'll know later when Haymitch punches. And then that's the last thing he ever gets from Haymitch. He gets
a punch
punched
in the face.
Yeah, and not like get back up. Like, he literally just punches him.
That one was serious.
And then he goes off to his death. Yeah, and
God,
so old man Wallace done went and got himself killed. And then we kind of just grow up. And then William goes away, because that's what he said. He just kind of went.
Yeah. I think they said that he and Uncle Argyle went back to wherever Argyle comes from, and then they went on a said the word. It was like a, it's like a religious
pilgrimage.
Yeah, they went on a pilgrimage together to like Italy or some shit.
Yeah, and again, that's just the thing. Like, if this is supposed to be an everyman commoner.
Yeah.
Then he needs to be sleeping in pig shit at his fucking tiny little farm the whole time.
Yeah, yeah. He's putting up a false, what is the word? Like a mask.
Yeah, there you go. And yeah, Brian Cox arrives after this funeral, and after a quick McDonald's plug, he says he's to live with him, and that's who raises him.
I swear, I thought that was Billy Connolly.
Did you really?
I really did. When he was riding up on the horse, I was like, is that Billy fucking Connolly?
You know, how the hell was Billy Connolly not in this movie?
I know. So that's why I thought, that's weird, but okay. And then he gets closer and I'm like, oh, it's not. But I thought that would have been awesome.
Yeah.
He's a great Scottish man.
Yeah, I love Brian Cox. Like, I'll recognize him anywhere. Yeah. I forgot that he was in this tiny role. Again, kind of surprised me why he didn't play a bigger role in 1995. Maybe
was
it was
his prime back then.
I would think so. But now that I think about it, he's kind of always just been there. Maybe it was more like the later 90s and early 2000s where he got a little more noticeable in the States. But yeah, how was Billy Connolly not in a comedic role? Like, just...
yeah, he could have been the one who gets shot in the ass.
Yeah, yeah. Or he could have been the crazy Irishman.
Yeah.
like a northern Shetland Scotsman or something, just super.
One of the Highlanders.
Nutty. There you go. One of the Highlanders. All right. So now we get to the adulthood. And we get another thing that when I first watched this movie, I was like, holy shit, did they actually have this? Prima nocte, as they call it. I'm pretty sure it's noctis, because I don't think nocte is a word. I think noctis is the Latin word for like night or whatever. But first night, there is zero evidence that this ever actually was used or took place in Western European countries. But no one ever recorded shit for peasants anyway. And so this could have been one of those things that maybe happened a few times. And no one's ever going to write it down because they'd be like, nah, don't put that in the chronicle. But if it was the right and they could do it, then they would have fucking wrote it down. They wouldn't have been ashamed of it. But I think this is definitely something that happened in a post-medieval, like a Renaissance and early modern, to disparage how backwards the medieval period was.
It's like, I couldn't believe it when they started talking about this. And yeah, this is where we first meet the king and his son, who's... his successor or his future successor. And they start talking about prima noctes. And I was like, what is this? You know, initially they just say it and I didn't have a clue what it was. And when they start describing it and the poor woman who's, did they say she comes from France? She's the princess of France.
Yes, Isabella.
Yeah. Oh my God. The look of shock when she enters that room. And I think the king's son has sent her instead. And they're all like, excuse me, a woman?
Woman? I thought it was interesting, too, that nobody got up. Like, nobody would, Your Highness, like, everyone, that was really weird. And I think it was just to show the, not indignancy, the, or not a rep, what word am I trying to think? Not disdain, of just where Edward's just like, oh, I don't really care about this woman.
Yeah, she was just completely, like, totally disrespected the whole time she was here, I thought.
Yeah, and, well, especially by her husband, Edward.
Yeah,
are
we supposed
Edward
to think
II.
That he's having a relationship with his counselor?
Okay, which leads us into Edward II. This guy would be king, okay?
Edward II is his name.
Yeah, so we're going to tie it in with Isabella because they were actually existed, okay? First with Isabella, she was about 2 years old when William Wallace was executed. So everything she does in this movie is completely made up. She never set foot in France or in England or Scotland or anything like that until obviously well after his death. She has what I think is the most badass epithet or like nickname. All right. You know what her nickname was?
No.
Isabella, the She-Wolf of France.
Holy shit. That's so cool.
That is fucking awesome. She is awesome because she was a conniving motherfucker who eventually got imprisoned and then released a little bit later. So she kind of was the regency of Edward II. At this point, when the movie came out, it was widely considered that Edward II was gay and that this guy, Piers Gaveston, was the guy's real name. He's not named Piers in this. It was the person he was always with. And then that guy eventually got executed, I think largely because of like Isabella and all that. And then he had another guy that was like a right-hand man that he was always with. But he had children. And now that we look back on it, we're like, this was slander against Edward II because eventually he was imprisoned and then he died and was killed. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't actually in there. I don't think he wasn't actually executed in that sense, but he did step down. And then Edward III, little baby Edward III, took over. And so what we think now, I should say historians think now, is that mainly that was slander. Maybe he was like bi or something like that. But now it is not thought of that he was actually gay. And especially the way that he's portrayed is so like mid-90s homophobic as well.
Yes. Yeah, I did think that, because he's just, he's like, I do love her line towards the end where she's like, the king is dying and his son is a weakling. Who do you think is going to be in charge? I was like, okay, queen, okay.
What I like about that is she says it when he's in the room and he just looks over like, hey, wait, was that, what about me? Wait, I'm going to be deposed. Who, what? wait until he leaves the room?
I loved it. But yeah, the king, he's Edward the Second, right? I'm going to keep calling him the same.
Yes, Longshanks is the first. Yeah.
Yeah, so Edward the Second, the son, is just, yeah, he's just so uninterested in the whole thing. And I don't think the film ever outright says that he's in a relationship with this counselor.
It is so obvious. Like, yeah, they're eye-fucking each other at the wedding.
Yes, and then the way, whenever he gets thrown out the window, he's obviously completely shocked. And I was like, okay, I see what's going on here. But yeah, he's not portrayed very nicely at all.
No, and he was a shit king, which is weird, because Edward I was... Oh, I should also mention this. Edward I, not only Longshanks, another of his nicknames, the Hammer of the Scots.
Oof.
Yeah, so it's one of those, like, you don't get the nickname the Hammer of the Scots because you lost. And when he died, they were absolutely winning, like, the war in that sense. Like, the Battle of Bannockburn, the last one, was 7 years after his actual death. Which was 2 years after the execution of William Wallace. Like, he didn't die right as William did that as well. But he was he pacified Wales. He kicked out all the Jews, took all their money. He was a motherfucker.
Mean king.
But a damn good one. A damn good one for what it did. Edward II was terrible. And then Edward III was fucking awesome. And that was through the Hundred Years' War.
Uh-huh.
Like, the start of the Hundred Years' War, the Black Prince. So he's the one that fucking beat France's ass for the longest time. And then outlived the Black Prince. So the old Plantagenets there, the Three Lions, if you saw that also, that's the Plantagenets, Richard I, all of them, the Angevins and all that. Goes back to the Three Lions that y'all still have today on your soccer crests.
We do. And on the rugby. No, rugby is roses, my bad. It's football. Yeah.
That's the nickname of the football team, right? The Three Lions, right?
Well, just the Lions.
Oh, just the Lions? Okay.
And then the women is the Lionesses.
The Lionesses, that's right.
But yeah, you're right. The crest or whatever. It's got three lines on it, yeah.
Yeah, all right. So when we get to this Prima Noctis, they start like resisting punching. And tell me, if this was so weird to me. This English nobleman comes to claim his right here. And this woman, this ethereal scene where she's almost like elvish, like floating through the scene, slowly taking the blade away. I got such Lord of the Rings vibes from this.
It could have been plucked straight from Lord of the Rings. Yeah, it could have been. I don't know. She's not in the first one, but she looks like the woman who says, I am no man. She looks kind of like her.
Yeah.
And she's kind of floating through the scene as if she was Galadriel, like calming all the men down, and it was weird. I didn't like it.
I started laughing because they have the knife to Flanagan. The real guy's name is Flanagan. I've seen him before, the guy with the scar on it.
Okay, yeah.
And like the knife is there, and I swear to God, yeah, it's not like she walks up. She just comes in like side face, just floating in, and just takes it away. Whisper something in his ear, gives a kiss, and then again, like, it's led away. It's just really, I know they were trying to be highly dramatic and make us be like, oh my God, this poor woman is about to go get, you know, essentially fucking roofed, if you want to call it in that sense. But it was just kind of comical to me.
It was very weird. Like, it was the weird tone to set. I think she's essentially like sacrificing herself to stop this whatever bloodshed is going to happen here. But it's just a very weird tone for her to go through with that.
And it lasted so long too.
It's a slow-mo for me. It was like, do we need this? We got 3 hours of the film.
Apparently there was more than an hour left on the cutting room table that Mel Gibson said if the, not producers, the company, production company, anybody else ever wanted to do a Gibson cut, he was up for it.
Wow.
I know.
Maybe he'll do it next year for what? 30 years.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. I wonder what would have been left out, though. Like, they added so much in that, you know, quote unquote, didn't need to be in. Like, well, I'm just always curious what would have been left out. I can see with something like Lord of the Rings, when you have a book and you just, you film stuff on the book and you're like, okay, that doesn't go in. But it's just weird that you would film like so much of that and then just be like, we might put it in. We might not. It's on the cutting
room
floor.
Decide not to have it. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it's
is weird.
It's quote a waste, but I don't know. Maybe use something else. All right. So at this point now, William and Mirin, his wife here, they get married in secret.
Yeah.
And sometime later, we get the inciting incident where Mirin is going to be assaulted by this 78-year-old English soldier.
No, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. The way he's like, oh, you remind me of my daughter back home.
Dude. Oh, I heard that.
Big
I'm like, okay.
Red flags.
They were
big
just
red
like,
flag.
How can we get the grossest looking person? Because this dude's too fucking old to be a soldier stationed in Scotland.
And the way he's licking her face.
And he's licking her face. And yeah, it was meant to be just gross. And she bites his cheek, kind of leaves the thing in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's going to be assaulted in there. William saves her. And then she is executed, which I thought was interesting. And I'll admit, I did not look this up. But if you're a commoner, you're being hanged. Like, is it hanged or hung? It's hanged. But, like, what if it's in the moment? I get if it's like, she was hanged.
No, she's being hanged.
He's being hanged. Were they hung?
No. I think it's always...
It's always hanged?
It's different if you're, like, if you hung up a coat or if you hung up something, hung up a picture on the wall. It's different, I think.
Okay.
Don't know why I think this. So I could be talking about my arse.
Your arse. There you go.
But I'm pretty sure... In this situation, it's hanged.
Okay, because that's what I always thought it was, but that actually came up in a discussion with somebody that I know it's like they'll be hanged until dead, you know, until dead.
Yeah.
I get it. So, but like commoners were hanged, and like that was such a thing about noble privilege was nobles were beheaded. Like nobles were not hanged. If you were a traitor.
So it's like a clean.
Yes. And so, and that you're the, because it's terrible because if your neck doesn't break, and a lot of times they would make sure not to do it. You know, they wouldn't always do the dead drop, I think is what it was called. That might not even been a thing back in the medieval. I probably should know that. But it might not have even been a dead drop. They might have just been like, we're going to string you up and you're going to fucking choke to death over the course of, you know, several minutes or whatever it is to do it. And so with this, like, getting your throat slit, that's a pretty clean death.
Yeah, I think this is the first time I messaged you, like, what the fuck? I can't believe they killed her.
Okay, yeah.
No idea. I thought they were going to live happily ever after.
And a Mel Gibson movie.
It broke my heart. It broke my heart the way... Oh, I keep going to call him Mel.
William
Wallace thought that she got away. So he went to meet her
Grove,
in the field.
Yeah.
And then as she, in her final moment, she's like looking up, trying to find him. And she can't find him.
I know, that was
And then she
sad.
Gets her throat cut. And I was... it broke my heart. That was the first time in many that I went, oh!
Really?
No! Yeah.
Yeah, she was looking for him to save her, and
he didn't.
Now Mel Gibson, this has a lot of Mel Gibson things. One is this is tied so much to The Patriot. I can't believe it. Like he really just kind of remade this 4 years later, kind of.
Oh, really?
So Mel Gibson's wife's gonna die. There's gonna be violence against women in that sense. He's gonna have his revenge. Good Lord, is he gonna have his bloody revenge? He's going to kill English people, like torture porn, going back to the Passion of the Christ. At the end of this, he's just being tortured in that. We get to see it for, you know, several minutes of this draw quartering.
God.
And we'll get into what actually happened with that, because he didn't go all out. Like, I don't think he did. Maybe I missed a little bit because I'm going to kind of skip because I'm like, I don't want to see all that shit. But we'll go into how William Wallace was actually executed. And they did not fuck around with traitors back then. So
Jesus.
I did see, and again, I don't know because of what it comes from. I did see a count that William Wallace was like 6'5".
Oh, wow.
But,
the rumors in this film was that he's like
seven feet tall. fire out of his eyes and lightning bolts out of his arse.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, the account of William Wallace is simply only going to be pro William Wallace Scotland legend. So why not say you're 3 inches taller than the king you were fighting against?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's
yeah.
It. And this there's giants in Ireland and Scotland, so you never know.
Still? Or are they all dead? Oh, they all got...
I don't know. All the giants are...
One,
I think
one.
They're hiding somewhere.
Yeah, all the giants are north of the wall.
I think that's like... the Giant's Causeway in Northern Ireland is supposedly.
Oh, that's right.
Story. I forget the story, but it's all
the
about
legend.
How there was a giant in Northern Ireland and a giant in Scotland, and they were trying to build a bridge or something. I don't
Oh, that
remember.
was it? Okay.
Yeah, something like that.
To
And it's
unite.
really cool. If you go to Northern Ireland, you have to go there.
Yeah, I've heard of that for sure. Definitely, people go there. They'll always take like pictures
Yeah,
and post
it's
that they
really
were there.
cool.
All right, so we get this attack on the English garrison because now, okay, here comes the revenge tour. And I did think a lot of what I don't like about battle scenes are in this. I do like the nitty gritty of it, and we'll get to it when we get to the actual battle scenes. But in this, it just has a lot of cliched Hollywood. A guy's running at him full speed, screaming with his sword above his arm from like 20 feet away. And I'm like, okay, I get it was 1995, but it's nice that this shit doesn't seem to happen anymore because it's just fucking dumb. Like, it's just lame. I don't
Yeah,
know.
it's done a lot and it gets a bit boring, doesn't it? It gets a bit repetitive.
Yeah.
I find the fight scenes in this, you're right, some of them were very, very chaotic. And I thought that was good, especially when the horses are involved and there is just crowds of people swarmed around a horse and the horse is falling and there's arrows. And I thought that they did that really well in that you could see everything going on, but it didn't look organized at all.
Yeah, and that's another like misconception about medieval fighting, that it's unorganized fucking masses running into each other. And I'm like, no, that's not it at all. The whole point was you have to hold a line, and it was a lot of jabbing at each other
Spears.
with spears trying to break a line. The cavalry charge was to break it and go out, and they didn't show it because they didn't kind of show the end of the battle. But Falkirk, the battle they lose largely was that, where, you know, they got destroyed in that sense. But yeah, I like the brutality of the battle
Yeah.
when they show, like, okay, they have a helmet. Okay, that's fine. Somebody with the end of a hammer, you know, like that, that's what they were for, was to cleave right through there. And I like that they showed it because, like, that's what it should be. It should be arms getting hacked off, limbs getting hacked off. It should be just brutally, brutally violent. And they showed it, I think, in the first one. And The Messenger, the story of Joan of Arc, the Luc Besson movie, which I almost maybe thought about doing coming up in there. I thought it almost did it the best, where at the end of it, and they're just like, yay, victory. And there's just hundreds of people screaming because
Yeah.
they're bleeding out because their fucking arm has been hacked off or their leg's been hacked off and they have an arrow in them. And it's like, they're not going to die like that. They're going to bleed out on this battlefield screaming.
Yeah, I did think that at one point. I can't remember which of the battles it was in this film, but okay, Mel Gibson. William Wallace is like, they've just won the fight, and he's turning around to all the Scotsmen going, yeah, woo. And there's two people right at the front on the floor, like crawling towards him, like, help me, help me. And they're all just cheering. I'm like,
Yeah.
You guys, there are people that need medical assistance.
No, that was Stirling Bridge. Yeah. Yeah, like, that's what I mentioned there. That first one, I was like, okay, you know, they're showing that. But again, they don't have to get bogged down in it. But I do like in The Messenger that Joan of Arc is just looking out being like, this is fucking glory. Like, wait, this isn't what I thought. Like, I thought it was, she like, literally had like almost modern mindset of God said we're going to win. This is it. And the other guy, you know, funny, the guy who's an actual serial killer, Gilles de Rais, was just like, was this not what you wanted? God told you to come fight. This is fucking fighting. And you can see her going like, oh no, this is terrible. Cause I can just imagine, like, we can just watch a movie of it now, but just imagining, you know, I know the battle at Falkirk, I want to say, was it fucking, one of the battles was like 5,000 Scottish, like 9,000 Englishmen. So you're looking at, you know, hundreds of people that are going to be dying in this, in that sense, you know, up to 1,000, you know, a couple thousand or something like that. And they're all in that mass and it's just hundreds of them. And then the smell after a day.
So grim. Like, what happens? Did they send a cleanup crew? Like, what?
Whoever wins the battle does it. Like, you win a battle by leaving the field. You know, it's not about casualties. It's who has the fields. Somebody attacks somebody. If the defenders go away, they lose. If the defenders stay, they win. And then what you can do afterwards, you can appeal for like wounded and prisoner and all that stuff.
Wow. Yeah. God, I don't envy that job.
No, I don't. But again, I guess that's what the clergy were for. Go out there and give last rites to everybody. Says send him to hell. The noble here, though, gets karmic justice as his throat is slit just like Murin's.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, God, I loved Morin. Is she Morin or Murin?
Is it Morin?
It's like Murren.
Murren. That's what I'm just like. Murren.
Yeah.
Murren. Okay. Well, I'm not going to say it that way.
Murren. Yeah. Murren. But yeah, I did. It was good to see William cut his throat without hesitation, just straight away.
Yep. And they go to another garrison, and this other guy, Flanagan, I think Matthew Flanagan, was that the actor's name? As I'm dancing for time. Fuck, I can't find it. Tommy Flanagan. Is the actor's name, Morrison. His wife is the one that had the Prima Noctis. He goes there, gets his revenge. And my thing is this, like, they burn down this garrison. And it's like, I mean, I know that they might not have people, but, like, you can man this garrison. Now, I get it's also a thing for English, but it's just, if you're going to be invaded, if you're starting a rebellion right now, you're going to be invaded. Like, maybe you should kind of keep this garrison for now to maybe hold it. And then maybe if you have to retreat, you can burn it on your way out. Yeah. But it seems pretty vital to have.
Yeah, they're just kind of in this reckless push forward mode at the moment, aren't they? Just burn everything in their path and keep going.
And you know what? Honestly, that's very good for historical, because William Wallace was kind of like a fucking berserker. And there was actually a quote here, piece of shit, that I have for... God damn it. Okay, I lost it. I'll come back to it. I thought I had it down, but my IMDb wasn't in here. Okay. Yeah, we'll get back to that right there.
There was some really great scenes here where I'm just obsessed with, all throughout this film, the bagpipe music. I don't know if it's like deep in my blood and my bones, but I don't know why, but bagpipe music seems to like light a fire inside of me.
It's awesome.
And I just feel like I want to go and burn down a garrison as well.
You want to burn down English in the north? Yes. Oh, that's right. You're in the north. That's right.
In the north. Yeah, exactly. It's so funny because England played Ireland in the rugby yesterday, and it's like usually quite a hot topic in my family because we're, my dad and my family's all Irish, but then I have a stepmom who's English, and I usually make the joke that I'll just support whoever wins because I'm Irish, but I lived in England for so long.
Yeah.
And my dad was on the phone earlier and he goes, oh, well, I suppose you're supporting the English today then. And I was like, actually, no, I'm not supporting the English today because I've just watched Braveheart. And he was like, oh, okay, I understand.
No, I just watched Braveheart. So
I think burn it all to the ground.
I think England and Ireland are in the next Nations League.
What is that?
Soccer.
Oh.
Yeah, so I think they're going to play each other, I think, a home and away. So
Ireland is not, soccer's not our strong point.
No, but that might be a fun thing when they play, to go to Ireland to watch.
Is that where they play?
I think if they're in the same group, they should play a home and away.
Okay. So and when would that be?
That's a good question.
I'll Google it, Google is not working.
No, so I'll read this off. This is what Mel Gibson actually said about like messing up history in regards to Wallace. And it said, some people said that in telling the story, we messed up history. It doesn't bother me because what I'm giving you is a cinematic experience. And I think films are there first to entertain, then teach, and then inspire. I honestly think that it should be the other way around. I think it should be inspire, then teach. Teach should be last. Like, movies aren't really there to teach, I would say.
Not a documentary.
No, of course not. And as I'm doing on this, I'm not saying this movie sucks because of the history's messed up. I'm just giving it
in because, curious. Yeah.
Because it's so incorrect. And again, it's what... I don't want people to watch this and be like, oh, that's what the medieval period was like. There probably were historical inaccuracies, quite a few, but maybe there weren't. Who's to say? Because there was very little history about the man. And he is right about that. The main thing that comes from is this blind Harry, despite the fact that he was, again, deemed so important that he was executed, drawn and quartered by the English king. Like, it's still, he wasn't the man. And I think that's what get out of this, too, is like Robert the Bruce was the main guy. Like, he became the king. He was the leader. At one point, it was those three as like guardians, and I'll explain in a later battle why it wasn't afterwards. But he says here, it wasn't necessarily authentic, or he continues. And some of the stuff I read about him, he wasn't as nice as he was on film. We romanticized it a bit, but that's the language of film. You have to make it acceptable. Actually, he was a monster. he always smelled of smoke because he was always burning people's villages down. He was like what the Vikings call a berserker. But we shifted that a bit because someone has to be the good guy, somebody has to be a bad guy. And I completely 100% actually agree with him on that, of what to do and to make it cinematic. So the thing was, and we're really bouncing all over here, which is fine. So William Wallace was tried for treason. And just like in the movie, his defense was that unlike the other Scottish leaders, he never swore allegiance to Edward. like the other ones did, like Robert Bruce and all them, the higher ones did. But he was also charged with committing atrocities against civilians in war, sparing neither age nor sex, monk or nun. Now, granted, that could just be the English saying you killed fucking women and children, yeah, and everything like that. So as a result, this trial has attracted the attention of modern legal scholarship, as it was one of the earliest examples of what we would now consider a prosecution for war crimes.
And shit.
And was one of only three known pre-modern trials which raised, in today's terms, issues of international humanitarian law.
Oh, shit. That's serious.
I know. And so he was an absolute motherfucker. And they show him sacking York, burning all this stuff down. And it's like, that's what he fucking did. Like, he was just, no, fuck the English. We're going to fucking go out. He was like a rabid dog, if you will. He was, oh, my God. He was fucking the mountain of Robert the Bruce's Tywin Lannister.
I was going to say, if they made this story now, I think they would make it a TV series, first of all, and they would probably make him a lot more dislikable, because I think now characters are a lot more accepted, you know, to be a little bit more gray.
Yeah.
And we'd have to have some English people doing bad things so we could get behind him initially.
Which they did. Make no mistake about that.
Oh, like
what Edward did in Wales was, there's a reason why Wales never, ever, ever again truly put up any kind of a rebellion. Like what the English did to Ireland was bad. What they did to Scotland was bad. He pacified Wales so fucking bad that you never heard from them again. So unlike with the Scottish, what the Scottish did, you know, it was bad.
Yeah. I just keep thinking about how I'm ready to support whatever war crimes Rhaenyra Targaryen commits.
There's going to be, the whole thing is goddamn war crimes. Spoiler alert for House of the Dragon 2. I just can't wait for that first fucking episode. Cannot wait for it. Cannot. But yeah, no, I agree with you that this, he was so romanticized in this, and he was so like perfect. He outsmarted them at all times.
Yeah.
And then when he finally gets caught, like he sniffs out all of these fucking things, all these assassination attempts. When he finally gets caught, he's literally just like walking in the street. He's like, ooh, and all of a sudden, two dozen English soldiers run out from behind him and get him. I'm like, okay, that was kind of
That's lame.
That was.
Yeah, he gets through so much. And then his one downfall was trusting that guy.
His one downfall was trusting the Scottish lords who already fucked him over.
This is the thing. I kept writing, these Scottish nobles are the fucking worst, allying themselves with the English. Ugh. Yeah. Every time the English came on screen, I was like, boo.
These Scottish cunts. Yeah. How about, speaking of English, Patrick McGowan is the Edward I, the actor Patrick McGowan.
Yes. Yeah.
When they go back in there, these rebels have routed. Did you hear him just roll those R's?
His accent is wild.
These rebels have routed my garrisons. And it's just, wow, he leaned into that routed.
He had a lot of fun with this role for sure.
He did. Oh, like, I think that's why I liked him when I was like 11 years old, was like, this guy's a badass. Like,
yeah, he's fun. Yeah.
Like he's smacking around his gay son. Well, that's not badass, I should say. He's smacking. Okay.
That's cut
that. Okay, that was badass. He's smacking around his gay. I should have said he's smacking around like his son, because he's gay, but just because he's weak in that sense. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So he's smacking around there. He's like not taking no shit, but he's trying to help him. He's like, you're going to fucking rule. This is how you do it. The guy's messing up. He takes charge. You know, I'm going to go back to Longshanks as my handle again. And to be
my first handle was Lucy Croft.
Oh, there you go.
I love Lara Croft so much.
Lucy Croft. Look at that. Well, it's right there with it.
Mm-hmm.
Four letters right off the tongue.
Yep.
All right, so we get Robert meets with his leper father, which again was interesting too. This guy, he slowly deteriorates throughout the movie.
They keep describing him as rotting, which I just didn't like at all.
And he gets worse and worse, and yeah.
So grim. And,
yeah, they start conniving about how best to support the war and to make sure that he's on the throne and all that right there. We're like, oh, okay. And this right here is where a lot of Scottish, especially nationalist Scottish people, had a problem. It's because Robert the Bruce is a fucking hero. Like he was the first king after this. He led them to victory at Bannockburn. This movie makes him a fucking traitor. They have him dressed as an English knight to the literal left-hand man of Edward I.
Yeah. Now, I obviously didn't know that going into this, so I just thought this guy is the worst. Like, they're worse than the English, really, for
Of
being
course, Trace,
traitors.
of
Yeah,
course.
traitors is so bad. So yeah, that's I'm not surprised now. When I wrote in my Discord earlier that I was watching this film today, our Scottish friend Spenny was like, "There's a lot of inaccuracies in this." I was like, "Okay, here we go." He said he started talking about Robert the Bruce a little bit, but yeah, so
Yeah.
there we go. I had no idea.
Yeah, First King. I mean, yeah, it's wild. And I just don't th I think this movie, it just didn't need all this shit. And when they're talking, they're all eating. William Wallace and them are all now together. Brendan Gleeson. I'm just gonna call him Brendan Gleeson, I forgot his name.
I'll try and figure it
They're
out.
eating, they're like, oh, the English are gonna ride up here. Oh, they've got mounted cavalry. What are we gonna do? And fucking William looks up at the trees and is like, we'll make spears. It's like,
We'll make long spears.
we'll make spears twice as long as anyone. It's like this was not needed, okay? We did not need these farmers that have never done anything, a peasant army, all right? We just didn't fucking need that. It's all peasants gonna get fucking murdered in that sense. They could actually have been like, they never really train or anything. We're just supposed to think they show up, obviously. And I do remember at the time watching it being like, holy shit, did they fight in kilts to do all that? No. Okay. They did not fucking have woad. That the blue paint and all that stuff is woad. It's what the Celts from like 1,000 fucking years before wore to fight the Romans. In that, no, this is a medieval army, all right? The Scottish and the English are both going to look like fucking medieval soldiers, medieval knights. They're going to have plate mail. Well, they have chain mail. Plate mail, not for the most part at this point right now, but chain mail, all of that in there. And it's just ridiculous to do it. And I just don't think it needed stuff like them fucking making spears and being like, oh, wait, a spear? Oh, yeah, we can do that. They fucking raid the garrison. They get weapons in that sense. And I don't know. They were not a fucking nation of peasants where all this shit was outlawed. I just didn't think it was needed.
I just couldn't believe how the whole time I was watching this, I think these guys are fucking running everywhere. How are
Yeah.
they not so worn out all the time? What are they eating? Like, what is the diet and fitness regime? Because they are running everywhere, through the fields, through the trees, all the time running.
There's like four horses in their whole army, and only those
Yeah.
guys get them when they fight.
Yes, yeah. And
And
then the rest of the time running.
they're like, we need the nobles. Rune's like, no, we don't. I'm like, yes, the fuck you do, because you
Yeah.
need people.
Just people in general. We need numbers.
Yeah, you need people in general. And here, this is where Stephen the Irishman shows up. And yeah,
Yeah.
this was David O'Hara. He played Fitzy in The Departed, the super Irish guy in The Departed. And when I saw that, I'm like, damn, he doesn't even look like him. And that was only like 10 years later.
Was it? Does he age or what?
Oh, he just looks so much older, and
Right.
he's very subdued. He's kind of playing a simpleton kind of thing, like a really
Okay.
dumb guy. And just, yeah, that was him. I was like, oh, but here we get to the Battle of Stirling Bridge. All right, the first major fight, which feels like it could be the climax, but it's only like an
Yeah.
hour and a half in. All right, so the Battle of Stirling Bridge, 1297, on the day of September 11th. 1297.
Cursed day.
I literally looked at it and I saw that date and I'm like, oh my
God damn
God, what is going on? Like, how? I swear on my life, I was like, okay, we're talking about fucking Braveheart. We're talking about a movie 800 or took place 800 years ago. It's medieval. There's no fucking way 9/11 is going to come up. And then the most famous battle of William Wallace's career, like most famous battle, you're thinking more than Bannockburn, is the Battle of Stirling Bridge, September 11th, 1297.
Jesus Christ.
I know. I just was like, all right, I'm done. Finish some
Well, that's
drinks.
your work done for the week, yeah.
Yeah. So you might notice the Battle of Stirling Bridge. There's no bridge here.
No, there isn't. I did notice that actually.
There's not a bridge here. So a lot, kind of in a way, almost Thermopylae-esque this was a huge win for the Scottish, because they basically were waiting until the English started crossing this bridge, and then they just fucking attacked them.
Oh, well,
Attacked them as they
yeah.
crossed this bridge, pushed them against the river, and beat the shit out of them, and was a huge, massive underdog victory.
And what, and they've just done this without the river as well?
Yeah, like they just fought like in
Oh,
whatever the
fuck
hell.
it. Well,
They just said, fuck it, yeah, and we'll do it in that sense. And we get, they may take our lives, but they will never take our
our
freedom. Freedom.
freedom.
And
I
again,
love this speech. I was ready. I was
yeah.
up from my seat.
You were ready to go?
I was shouting, yes. And I thought, I was wondering if he actually did the horse riding in this scene, because that horse is riled up. Like, that horse is Scottish and is riled up. And he's like, that's very talented horsemanship.
I did see something. Where did I see something about how I saw something where he almost was killed by a horse, but a stunt double or someone like pulled him away or something. So I don't know if he was on the ground and a horse almost fell on him, or he fell from a horse, but it was something along those lines there.
But they're scary creatures. I was thinking earlier in the film, whenever he kind of picks Murren up for their date and they just run through the field on a horse. And I was like, that's my ideal date. I want to do
really
that.
It is.
Yeah.
All right. Here's a good thing here. So when asked by a local why the Battle of Stirling Bridge was filmed on an open plain, Gibson answered that, quote, the bridge got in the way. the local answered, that's what the English found too.
Yeah.
It's like, hey.
I love Scottish people.
There you go. Like, yeah, the English so found that. They found out about that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So pretty much, yeah, the fighting here again, this is where they do like the feigned charge. They pull up the spears at the last minute. They're like wooden spears.
Oh my God. So I was watching the film and that scene was happening. And you know, it goes on for so long and he's like, hold, and the horses keep coming. Oh. And I go, like, I'm a sucker for slow motion cavalry. You know, Game of Thrones did it so good.
Yeah.
And the music, and you know, it goes and it goes, hold. And then they put the spears up and my mum rang me and I had to answer the phone and I was like, hello, hello. She's like, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, that was just like a really peak moment of the film. I'm all riled up. I should have just answered the phone for freedom.
You were just as surprised as the English cavalry charge was.
Yeah, I really was. I was like, oh my goodness. But yeah, that's absolutely brutal. Hate that for the horses.
Yeah, there are 27 horses killed on set.
No,
they weren't.
Shut up, man.
I looked, because I'm looking at it going, holy shit, man. Like, obviously they weren't stabbed, but some of them are falling, and I'm like, that looks like a real horse. That looks like it's falling. I couldn't find anything
they
that showed.
They do get trained to fall.
Yes, oh
I've
yeah.
I've seen this before. It's actually amazing when they train horses to do stunts like that, and they train them to fall on their backs. But yeah, it always looks painful.
Yeah, they said that they had some on tracks. And I remember seeing this like behind the scenes. It was just a horse on a track, like a fake horse on a track. And then it just got hit, you know, and then they do the magic of editing and all that. And other ones, they had collapsible weapons. So I guess that means it actually did hit the horse.
Yeah.
And the horse pulled up. And I'm like, that seems dangerous. Because
that's not nice.
No, because the horse
doesn't know it's not acting.
The horse doesn't know what it is. But again, if it's trained and, you know, it could be one of those. When they film it, maybe it's only like five people right there. And then it's just because it's so closely zoomed in. But this, I got to give the movie a shit ton of credit for this. This was fucking amazing. And for 30 years ago, this looked every bit as fucking good. Maybe it looks so much better because it was more dangerous than what they allow now for the horses.
Yes, it's very practical. Yeah. And yeah, there's a lot going on. I actually follow this company on social media that train horses here in England for TV and film. And it's amazing what they do. And I think his name's Steve something, and they train the horses for The Witcher. And they often post videos of their horses, you know, dress rehearsals with their wild hunt outfits on, and they train just to get used to the outfits and stuff, and it's so cool seeing what they do. But yeah, this I agree. I wrote down that this scene was insane, like so good, and it's just you feel like you're right in the thick of it with them.
Yeah, and you would think like, why wouldn't everybody do that? Why wouldn't everybody just show up and be like, oh, we don't have spears, we're just gonna sit and then pick it up at the last minute. And it was just like, it wasn't really that easy because you kind of just had to, you know, really get formation, you know, of what it was. But it is what would have happened if there were no halberds, if there were no pikes. You're going to get fucking cavalry charge, like a heavy shot cavalry. And that's kind of what it was. They mentioned it a couple times. Nobody's ever withstood a cavalry charge in blah, 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 blah. And it's like, well, I don't know how much they had that on record that they had. But at the same time, it was like, that kind of, this right here. You know, very, very heavily fictionalized, I guess you can say what it is. But again, it's not that big of a thing, you know, unless you're just like sad she wanted to see the bridge and how it was. Again, he says it got in the way because it just wouldn't have been a cinematic. Like,
yes,
like literally English crossing a bridge and the Scottish just attacking him right there. It wasn't as clever either, because fucking William Wallace has to be the most clever motherfucker that's ever existed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did.
And they did it early. But to give the movie credit, they did explain early on that pointing to his head, you have to, before you can use a sword, you have to use your mind. So they did really set that up, though.
True. Yeah. And they do it a lot in this film where they like bamboozle the enemies. And even when he first comes back to that village after Murren is killed and he's like pretend surrender, he does it a lot where they do a lot of trickery in their fight style, which I quite like.
And which is good, because this essentially the Scottish War of Independence, even after William Wallace died, was essentially guerrilla war. Like, right. It was, because you couldn't stand up to them all the time on a field. Like, it was essentially a hit and run away, like send them north up here into the fucking Highlands, into the Scottish territory, and make them fight there. You know, the soldiers wouldn't want to be there. Nobles don't want to be there. And so he just kind of wind it down. So I did think that was good. And he does do this false retreat that he does at Stirling Bridge here. He does in The Patriot also.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm telling you, he just took this and just was like, ah, fuck it. Let's just kind of finagle this a little bit to the Revolutionary War. So, but I don't know. Maybe we'll talk about that movie coming up. I don't know. All right. So we get Isabella and William's first meeting, the Queen and William Wallace, and she is just fawning over him. God damn, that floor got to be soaked.
My God, all the girls love William Wallace. And I loved earlier in the film when, I don't know what you would call this, like the Queen's friend, it seems like her
handmaid.
Missandei.
Yeah.
Yes, her handmaid. Oh God, yeah. No. I watched The Handmaid's Tale recently. You don't want to be a handmaid.
Not in that movie or show.
Not in that film. And they're speaking in French to each other, which is just, you know, that's just a lifesaver, having your own little secret language. And she says, I hope your husband goes to Scotland and meets Wallace and then you'll be a widow. Class. I just hate him so much.
And like, damn, they got him. And loveless marriage. And the big thing hit on too here, she was like, oh, what would love be like? And it's like, yeah, that's not these types of marriages. They weren't about love. Like, you're the daughter of the French. You're a princess, a French princess.
It's a political arrangement.
It is absolutely a political arrangement, because a big thing was France and Scotland throughout all of the years were obviously natural allies because they hated the fucking English.
Yep, yep. And that still lives on to this day. Even rugby brings this out. I swear it's so bad in rugby. And there used to be this TV advert. I don't think it's on anymore, but it's for the Six Nations, which is on every year about this time. And there was a TV advert. I don't remember what company it was, but it was all the people from the other five nations. So there's Irish, Scottish, Welsh, and they were all going, England, England. And I was like, okay, why are all these teams shouting England? And at the end, it's like, who do you want to lose? And everyone says England. And it's like, England. It's still here. It's still rooted into all of our psyche somehow.
I mean, that's the United States and everybody in the Western Hemisphere. Like North and South, South America, Central America. It's just like, they're going to go against the U.S. for good reason.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Hundreds of years of imperialism and everything, of course. That's going to happen. All right, so this is where, after this meeting, she's, fawning over him. Oh, my God, she might have squirted when he started speaking French. She's like,
her face lit up, didn't it? It was so funny.
Lit up in there. And so this is where she returns, and I just love, that basically Edward was like, he knew this was never going to work anyway. He was never going to accept it. So he's ready to dispatch an army to go up there. And then I just love when, as she's leaving, as we talked about there, Edward II is just like, you returned with the gold, right? And Edward like launches around like, oh yeah, the gold. Like he didn't even fucking care.
He didn't give a shit.
And that's what happens when you send a woman and they're like, oh, starts coughing and slowly dying. Oh, what could that mean?
Sorry, I nearly choked there.
Just like him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this is the oldest Hollywood like cliche. If someone starts coughing, they're fucking dead. Mm-hmm. They're dead.
Yeah, yeah. Even just one little.
Just anything. I would just love, and maybe some shows have done it. Just have out of the blue, just somebody like just start coughing
for no reason.
You know what? Django kind of did it. Okay. when Django, when they're eating with at Calvin's place and his lawyer starts coughing, they make that joke about 2 weeks in Boston. Oh, that lawyer just starts starts coughing. I literally thought, I was like, he's going to fucking die. He's been poisoned. Mm-hmm. Something's going to happen. And nothing happens. So maybe Tarantino did do it.
Maybe he was doing that as a little bait and switch.
He got me. He got me in there. All right, so now we get the Scottish nobles fighting. So after this big victory, they're fighting in there. They mention a country of our own. And yeah, I already mentioned that before. In medieval sense, that is not what it would have been. This would have literally been like, who's going to be fucking king? Who has what lands? So, you know, that was pretty much going to be it there. Coming up quick, though, we have the Battle of Falkirk, okay?
Yes.
All right, so the Battle of Falkirk here, it's shown that, oh, the Bruce betrayed poor William, and, like, this is why the battle was lost, you know, and then the nobles retreat and do all that, when, no, in reality, William Wallace just got his ass kicked by Edward I. And after this, after this battle, he wasn't a nobody, but he resigned as one of the guardians. It was him, Robert the Bruce, and this other guy that I think Robert the Bruce ended up having murdered like a few years later and excommunicated for. Those are like the three guardians. William Wallace stepped down, resigned that after this battle. And for the most part, militarily, he was not that big of a factor.
That was it after this
battle. That was it. Because this was a disaster and he was the one leading it. And unlike what it says, he wasn't really betrayed. He just fucking got because, one, Edward I was a fucking great, competent commander, and it was a pure doubled envelopment where they spread out and they isolated the fucking Scottish archers, got rid of them, and then they had these little, like, formations, little hedgehog-type pike formations that had no protection, so then they just fucking were sit there and just got picked apart by the fucking archers. Longbowmen, a lot of Welsh, longbowmen there. And they just did it, and they got fucking destroyed. But this is where the Irish show up. And how about this? How about this note, okay? It says here, the Irish actually fought against William Wallace, and I figured that, because you know what happened there. Mel Gibson decided to show the Irish joining forces with the Scots because modern audiences might be confused to see the Irish and the English on the same side. Here, how about how about this, though? The Scottish and Irish actors also refused to fight each other.
Oh, see, everyone comes together against the English.
Against the English. Well, especially when it comes to, like, independence, you know?
For sure. Yeah, exactly. And especially if the commander's going to be saying stuff like, yeah, arrows cost money, let's use up the Irish first instead. Excuse me.
Yeah, and that's and that was Edward I who actually said that. And that is so cartoonishly mustache twirling evil. I hate that shit too. We don't need, you just don't need, like, we get it. We don't fucking like him. He's terrible.
We already, like, know he's the bad guy.
We already know he's bad. And again, I know it's not real or anything like that, but then some people could also just be like, oh man, they might've done that. Of course they fucking would not have done that.
Yeah.
And then he leaves. Then he leaves before the battle ends. He's like, oh, shall we retire? Inform me of our victory. I'm like, are you, what? No.
Yeah, he fucks off midway through the fight.
I mean, I know he's just a cocky asshole, but, like, goddamn.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I didn't like it at all.
No, he was just a bit too much in that sense. How about this, the 2014 Scottish independence referendum? Do you remember that? About 10 years ago in September.
Yes. Okay. I vaguely remember it. God, I can't believe that was 10 years ago.
Yeah, 50, because I remember it was a little bit before Brexit. 55% voted no.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's a solid amount. Like, you know, it's 55 to 45% essentially. But that's still, man, that ain't that far.
I know. I always think if it's like 50 something, that's not enough.
If it's in the 50s?
Yeah, I'm like, no, we need to do it again.
But I mean, if you get to 60%, that's basically like 3 in 2, you know, that's like 3 out of 5 people, which it doesn't seem in that sense right there, but I don't know. So I know that was a big thing. Also them talking about it again after Brexit, obviously of potential.
Yeah.
Scottish. Cause
they tried to do it again. I think when if initially got cast as no or yes or whatever the question,
yeah.
I can't remember the way the question was worded. They wanted to do it again, and everyone was like, well, no, that's not how, like, democracy works. You can't just say, oh, do it again in case you guys change your mind.
It is weird,
but then
though.
They had the excuse of Brexit. Okay, like, okay, now we've got these different set of circumstances. Do you have a different idea of what you want to do?
But that's the thing, like, how much time you have to almost put, like, a time before you do it again, because you have to do it again, but you're right. You can't just keep doing it. like every year, you know?
What about now?
Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, it would almost be like, okay, we're going to vote on it and we can't do it again for another 10 years, or we can't do it for another 5 years without like 80% of the, you know, or something like that. Because I'm looking up right here, proposed second Scottish independence referendum. And I guess they're now discussing whether or not they can take place without the UK government's agreement.
Yeah. It's a whole mess. Northern Ireland is the same at the moment. I don't think the Northern Irish Parliament even sits at the moment.
I saw that they have not for like over 2 years to protest this Sinn Féin, I guess, or Sinn Féin. I don't know how to say it. Like
Sinn Féin.
Sinn Féin doing it. And it's just like, okay.
What are you guys, so nobody's going to work.
It's a nice democracy you have there.
Like, yeah, so much for getting a devolved government and we're all just going to not do anything with it.
Well, that's literally like not what... That's, antithesis of a democracy. Like, it's like, oh, we didn't get what we wanted, we're not even going to have a government.
Just don't do
that's
anything.
Not how it works.
Like, are they getting paid? Like, it's so silly.
Yeah, I don't, it must not be that big a deal though. If,
well, no, because largely it falls to the London Parliament anyway. So it's not like they're just, you know, it's like this lawless land at now.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's just yeah.
So I guess there was supposed to be another referendum in October of 2023. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson requested the request to hold a referendum in 2022. And so now they ruled that in 2020, they ruled that, I guess, independence referendum is outside the competence of the Scottish Parliament. So I guess they're saying you can't do it.
Wow. Okay.
I know.
I think I would, the only place I would ever consider moving away from Newcastle would be Edinburgh. And I would love to live in Scotland.
See, I would do Ireland just because I like the mindset and I like the Irish. I like the general mindset of like Irish politics too.
Yeah.
I just love how anti-fucking imperialist and anti-colonialist it is for like everything. And I'm like, fucking Ireland, man. I need to go over there. I need to go over there sometime.
Need to do a trip around Ireland and then Northern Ireland as well and see the differences in those two wee countries.
All around. Don't got to tell me twice or convince me with a good time there.
Go in the summer, though, because you don't want to go in the winter and it'd be cold and fucking rainy and bullshit. I mean, I always say that.
It's
going
to be rainy
anyway,
probably. But.
Yeah, you came to Newcastle in July and I was like, brilliant. It'll be nice, sunny days. And I don't think... the clouds lifted once when you
I
were here.
I saw one day, a half a day in Manchester.
Yeah.
And then from that point on, from the next day in Manchester all the way through leaving Newcastle, those 3 or 4 days, it was no sun, and I'm not sure it ever even stopped raining or at
it
least
was just
sprinkling.
Foggy. I have some videos of you walking along the Tyne River, and you can't even see the bridges and that in the background because it's just fog gray.
Yeah, that's the Northern England experience, though.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, all right, so major loss here. This cavalry charge there, we see that Robert the Bruce is in English garb protecting the king. So ridiculous. It completely betrays, I don't know, whatever. I don't think they needed him to be like this. He could have just been wishy-washy and on both, trying to play both sides. I don't like that they literally made the fucking national hero a traitor. It's like making a movie about the Revolutionary War and showing like George Washington or Thomas Jefferson like working with the British, like literally siding with the British at one point. And that would like, I would think that if that happened, people would burn down the theaters.
Yeah. It is crazy to think of that. I'm trying to think of like an example in my life. I think I'll have to circle back to that. Something that would be relevant to me.
Yeah.
Where I would be so disgraced by how this person is being portrayed.
Lara Croft working with the bad antique people or whatever it would be.
Antiques.
Yeah, the bad antiques people. I'm like, I don't remember that.
She does do that in one of the films, though.
She turns?
Well, no, they work together for the good of the planet.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But then she does fuck them off later on.
Yeah. All right. So we get William Wallace's revenge tour here, where he's like a fucking ghost.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He sniffs out another assassination attempt, and his reward this time is banging the queen.
Oh my goodness. My favorite bit is where he's like, why do you help me? And she basically just like, because you're hot.
She's like, God damn. She's like, have you, this is the medieval period, chivalry. If you write a poem right now in French, my pants will literally fly off.
Yeah, she is so down bad for William Wallace.
She's a woman, I understand. Though,
so. I understand. Yeah.
Yeah, his hair, man. Woo, his mane.
He looks awesome in this
and
film.
His blue eyes.
Yep, the body is bodying.
It's very much, and I tell you what, I will also give this movie credit too. He's very much, these are realistic bodies that these people
yes.
have. Like, he
yeah.
looks like, I mean, you can see his fucking veins are popping out like normal, but he's not. You can tell he didn't go to the fucking gym for 4 months mm-hmm. straight. He looks like a fucking medieval warrior, somebody who'd be strong and lean as shit would be. So
yes.
for accuracy, I'll actually put that a big plus for that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And they all, you know, like I said earlier, they're running constantly. They do look just like super physically fit people, but not showy muscles.
Yeah, they got farm strength, like practical yes. strength. Claymore,
exactly.
fucking Claymore
throwing
strength.
Those fucking rocks around the place.
There you go. Oh, I did have that fucking basic Highland Games note when he showed up, when they showed up to do all that. And yeah, so this revenge tour goes in there, kills a couple of the nobles. It's not realistic at all, and it can be kind of cheesy, but I just liked the blood dripping down on that guy's bread. And I was like,
so good.
I was like, okay, it's ridiculous that he can get past all of these guards and to get mm-hmm. to these people. It's ridiculous he could put a body up there. I get it, all right? But again,
it's so stupid.
This is what you do in a movie, because you suspend the disbelief for something like this, and then, of yeah. course, the blood knows when to drip at the perfect dramatic time. But I was like, that's fucking good. And then it falls down, and it's just yeah. like, unless we're made to think that he was up there and dropped it, but...
Well, I
wait,
I
that's true. Somebody would have had to have, yeah.
He would have had to be up there at some point.
Because the body falls, yeah. Well, the body mm-hmm. fell, like, he didn't have, like, a timer on it.
Yeah, so he must have chucked it through and then bounced.
Okay, yeah. No, I thought that was actually a really, really fucking cool scene.
Yeah, and I'm so surprised that I didn't know what was going on throughout this whole film. And like, there's some scenes that I think are just kind of iconic, and I don't believe I've never seen them before. And that was one of them. Like, they were just sat around having dinner, talking about where
all
is
smug.
He, where
yeah.
might he be, and the drip. I loved it. I thought it was so good.
The drip go, oh, and then Robert in there. I just saw a note here. Wallace's real wife's name was Marion, but they thought that was too close to Maid Marian from Robin Hood.
Fair enough.
I'm like, what? Why would, I guess, cause, I don't know. Like, I don't know why people
would. Why
does
that matter?
Talk about not giving audiences credit. Jesus.
Oh my God.
Yeah. All right. So Wallace ends up being betrayed by the nobles. He's going to meet with them in Edinburgh.
Again.
Yeah. What? Wait, what'd you say?
Again.
Oh, again. He's going to meet with them. He gets betrayed at this point. The other people, the Irishmen and the Scotsmen. The actual one there. Tell him don't. He gets punched by Hamish. And he goes off.
Again.
And he gets betrayed there. But Robert did not know. Feels betrayed even by his own father there. And he tells him, die, bitch.
Yes. He says, oh, he said, what does he say?
He says,
my hate will die with you.
But he says it. And again, this is where, it's so dramatic, but it's so good. Because Angus McFadden is the actor here. Who is Scottish, who he does not have that thick of an accent.
What actor is that?
Angus McFadden, Robert the Bruce.
Okay. I have written down that his accent is fucking crazy.
Well, like how though?
Like,
what do you mean?
He had a normal accent, like he had a Scottish accent
yes.
all the way through. And then at some point, I think it might have been here, I can't find my note. At some point, I just thought his accent's disappeared. He's English. Why does he sound English?
See, maybe because he was conspiring with them and wanted to be. And honestly, maybe that's what they were going for, is
yeah.
that he was so connected to the English that he would speak like them, you know? And if they really did mean to do that, I think that's actually kind of brilliant to do.
It is quite clever.
But because if I didn't know this actor, but his name, Angus McFadden, like,
yeah, I mean,
it can't be any more Scottish than that.
Yeah.
But he's got. His hair, sorry, the hair's throwing me off. It's so mid-90s hair.
Is it?
Oh my God, it's wavy in there. And it's just, why does he have this modern short-cropped hair like this when everyone else looks like a fucking Highlander?
Yeah.
That kind of threw me out of it. But if I didn't know that this guy was Scottish, I would have thought, didn't think he would have been. Because his accent wasn't, it didn't need to be crazy, I get it. But the other clansmen leaders, they had thick accents.
Yes, there was all sorts of thick Scottish accents here. But yeah, I couldn't believe how his accent disappeared.
Yeah, it was weird, but I think maybe that, oh, you know what? Maybe it was for people to notice, to be like, hey, why is it disappearing? Oh, it's because he's a traitor, and maybe now he's working with them at first. But now he's on full side of, you know, of William's side and all that. He's realized what is wrong. Again, just to reiterate, at no point ever was Robert of Bruce not the main leader of this War of Independence. Mm-hmm. Never would have wavered in that sense. I get they're doing it for dramatic purposes, but betraying a national hero. In the movie, that you would think that the country would fucking love.
Yeah.
Fascinating, Mel Gibson. Okay.
And so many Scottish people involved in the making of this film, and none of them thought, hey, we should not do this.
They did, but it's just, and that's another thing too. Mel Gibson only wanted to direct this movie. He did not want to act. He offered it to Brad Pitt.
No.
Could you imagine?
No, I've heard his Irish accent.
He couldn't do an Irish accent. That's exactly. That's why they have him in Snatch doing the P word accent, and not pussy, but Pike's Peaky. There you go. I was going to say, wait. I was going to try to say like Pike. I was like, wait, I just said it like Pike's Peak. There you go. Not the mountain of Pike's Peak, but what you would call, there you go, of what it is there. People are going to think I called him like a pussy. Like, wait, they can't say pussy on there. You sold out on the path. You're not cussing anymore. Wait, I already said cunt earlier, so never mind. They should know that.
Yeah, we got our quota for today.
There you go. All right, so now he is arrested. He's beaten. He's on his way to London, okay? And mm-hmm. So we get the, when he's talking with Isabella, we get the every man dies, but not every man. And I thought it was, but not every man truly lives. So I had a Mandela moment here, because it's every man, it says every man dies, but not every man really lives. I thought it was not every man truly lives.
Oh, so did I.
Yeah, it's not every man really lives.
Oh, well, yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. We get Isabella telling Edward again that the son will not sit on the throne, and Edward's in the corner going, wait, what are you talking about?
This is
mentioned
me?
Before.
Yeah. And then she starts saying, a child who is not of your line grows in my belly. I was like, whoa, girl.
Which ties back to what he wanted the Prima Noctis for, which was, if we can't like eradicate them, or we can't kill them out or move them out, we're going to basically
breathe
them out. So again, they tied it back to that. So I got to give the screenplay credit for that right there. And so this is what actually happened to William Wallace, because he absolutely was arrested and he was put on trial and he was drawn and quartered, amongst other things. All right. So this right here is why, largely in the American Constitution, we have no cruel and unusual punishment. Because you English, the royal people out there, might be English in there, the English out there, or some motherfuckers when it came to it. Wallace was taken from this hall where he was to the Tower of London, where again, they would always execute, keep people like that. Stripped naked, dragged through the city at the heels of a horse to this place at Smithfields. I guess that's some place in London or something like that. I don't know. He was hanged, drawn, and quartered, okay? He was strangled by hanging and released while he was still alive. So they would do what they did here, where they hang him
to
15, 20 seconds or whatever, let him go, like to straight torture. I mean, just horrific, okay? So he's released while he was still alive, all right? So while he was still alive, he was emasculated. Do you know what that means?
I could take a guess.
Genitals cut off.
Is that what they do to him in this bit when they strap him to the cross?
I think when you see him, like, I think so in there. So, yeah, so they cut off his balls and his penis in that sense. While he's alive, by the way, he was eviscerated. And for those,
I don't know what that means.
Okay, eviscerated means they cut him open and took out his entrails. So while he's still alive, and they burned it before.
Surely you just, at some point, must just pass out from the pain and, you know.
I would think that it would be done quickly in that, but like bleeding out. But I also probably know like how to keep them alive to do it.
Yeah.
At which one he was then beheaded. So he's dead by now. And then cut into four parts, hence the quartered. And like the drawn and quartered means, it says here he's cut into four parts, but I thought his body was ripped apart by horses. Like that's usually what the drawing and the quartering means. You're drawn, spread out, and quartered by horses ripping you apart.
But they did that. They said that they rack him in the film where they, you know, he goes up and he's like, he's held up like this, and then his feet are being pulled by the horse. Maybe they just do a continuation of that one.
Yeah, but maybe, I know, I think it was Guy Fawkes, I think, was drawn and quartered also. I think because that's the one that happened there. Maybe he was the one that was ripped apart or something like that. Wallace's head was then dipped in tar and placed on a spike atop London Bridge. And his four body parts were sent all throughout the border, the northern border of Scotland, England.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. So that's why we have Sixth Amendment or whatever it is that's against cruel and unusual punishment. I don't even know it. It's that important.
I mean, yeah, I think that's valid.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, that was it right there. So they got a lot of it in there of what happens. Yeah. This is quintessential Mel Gibson torture porn here. This is nothing like what he would do for like an hour straight showing our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ tortured in the Passion.
Yeah. I mean, I've never seen anything like this before, and I've not seen any of his other films apart from Daddy's Home 2, so there's no torturing in that film.
It's even though he didn't direct it, he gets tortured in Lethal Weapon like a little bit. Maybe that's where he got it from. It just was like, hey, this is kind of awesome, like seeing this on here. So he'll do
one last chant of freedom as well.
He gets the George Michael comes in, or he gives his George Michael impression here. Here's freedom right as Edward dies. How poetic.
Yes, exactly. I think what was his lasting words, something. Well, not his lasting words, but he would live to see the death of William Wallace.
Yeah. Yep. And again, just to reiterate that, he died like a couple of years later in that sense. But for the couple of witnesses there to go back and say the legend. We then end the ending scene, which is 9 years later at the Battle of Bannockburn. Which is, I love how Robert is like in chainmail and armored up and looking all regal, and nobody else is. They're still in their kilts with no fucking armor.
Nothing at all. It's they're like, just why? Raw dogging it.
Why?
I thought you might jump it.
I'm laying out on you completely.
Keep hearing people say this recently, and I just think it's so funny.
Yeah, well, I'll never look at unarmored. You know, next time I play Skyrim or something like that, I'm gonna be like, you know, I'm gonna do a no armor, I'm gonna do a raw dog run, huh? All right, we need to clip that because
your time will run at the Witcher.
There you go, yeah. Raw dogging it. I had my hands up about to make this point again, and you say it, and I just it just like a stoke or a stick in the spokes of a tire. And I just got launched off into the ditch.
What? I'm sorry. I don't even know what you're going to say.
I don't even remember either. What are we talking about?
I
apologize. Like, why? Don't apologize for that. That's gold. That's what I always try to do, is try to just throw off everything there. No, it's just, why would they have him dress up like this? Like, I know he's supposed to be the king, but it's really weird that he's dressed like this when nobody else is like that. Why do you think did that?
I mean, I don't know. I just think it's so weird. I notice it as well. And usually I would not notice things like that, I don't think. But he stood out so much. I don't know if, they're trying to make him out to be the king, the noble. But I don't know why they would just stick to there. Especially 9 years later, their gear hasn't changed at all.
Well, they didn't put the time on here. So
So
literally, for all people know, is like 2 months
later.
Next
week.
You know, it could have been next week. But no, he essentially was the king from... like de facto king from like, was it 1306, 1308 or something on. And from this point on right here, officially it was not done until like 1328 or 1326. There was an actual treaty where the Scots got their independence per se. But from this moment on, it was like done and dusted. Like they got absolutely fucking destroyed here by Edward II, you know, led this army.
Yeah.
They got destroyed. From this point on, it was pretty much like actual Scottish independence.
They won their freedom.
Yeah, but then eventually they wouldn't. Not till the next one, because right now they don't have it.
Yeah. Braveheart 2 will come after the next Scottish referendum.
Yeah, it's funny. You would think there would have been like an independence referendum after this. You know, people would have been like, hey, like, wouldn't this have really garnered renewed interest in it?
I don't even really know when the United Kingdom became a thing.
Like a different time, like right now, the United Kingdom of Great, like the latest one obviously was the partition of Ireland when it made it. Before then, I think it was 1707 when it became Great Britain and Great Britain and Ireland.
Yeah,
Yeah, I think it was like the Acts of Union, like 1707.
We have so many different names for these two stupid little islands. Like,
what do you mean?
There's five countries, but then there's like Great Britain and Ireland, which is like two nations. Yeah. And then there's the United Kingdom, which is the four countries, and Ireland's not included in that, which confuses so many people.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I understand. I understand. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Okay. So the Acts of Union, 1707. Wait, 1706 and 1707 is what Scotland. It put them together.
Okay, so that made the United Kingdom.
That might have made Great Britain. Now I'm confusing myself.
Okay, Great Britain. Okay,
yes, that made the Kingdom of Great Britain start with 1707 to 1800. In the 1800 is the one I'm thinking of when Ireland came into it.
Okay, because yes. Great Britain is just the island, isn't it? So it's Scotland, Wales, England.
Yes, technically, it's the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland is what y'all technically are now. In 1800, 1801, Acts of Union 1801 was Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland.
And now it's Northern Ireland.
Now it's Northern
Ireland. The rest of Ireland went away.
That was 1927 mm-hmm. partition. So yeah,
that's
y'all.
That's not that long ago.
I know. Oh man, how's that 100-year thing going to go?
Oh, it might be the reconciliation at this point.
God. 100-year. Oh, okay. I'll be in Dublin then.
Okay.
I'll be in Dublin. Dublin, though.
Yeah. I don't know.
What's going to happen in Dublin?
I don't know. Be hell on, I think, all over the place.
You think?
Yeah.
Northern Ireland, definitely, but.
Yeah. I need to.
Yeah, I won't go there at that time. I'm going to go there.
I don't know. Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe.
Here we go. 1995's Braveheart. All right.
Yes.
So let's get the tier rating. Let's get the tier rating here. Do you know where you're going?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, what you got?
I'm going to put this film in A.
You got an A, okay.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. I don't know if I said this at the start of the podcast, but this is the first time I've ever seen this film, and I had no idea what it was about. I'm really not very clued up on the history of it all, so I wasn't, you know, bothered by historical inaccuracies or anything. Like, I understand why some people might be, though, because, you know, especially if it's your country and your countryman being... disgraced like Robert was in this film, but I think it's great. I thought the fight scenes were fun. My downside would be the length of the film. I did find some bits quite like tedious. I felt like I wanted to, you know, pause it and go and do something else for a little bit, but I thought it was just a great battle film, and there was a little bit of romance, and I thought he was a great main character, William Wallace. I think they did a great job of him. And yeah, I just really enjoyed it, and I would highly recommend people watch it if they haven't done already. Don't know if I would sit down and watch it again unless it was just on TV. I would put it on, but I wouldn't commit another 3 hours of my life to this unless there was a really good reason.
Yeah, I think, and again, I've separated it from, like, historically, it's a V tier. It's terrible. It perpetuates terrible myths about medieval period that, again, I wish if more people would watch movies and understand that they weren't fucking real and try not to say they were real, I wouldn't have to do stuff like that, but people do. So again, hopefully by now people wouldn't do that thing, but I'm torn between an A and a B tier, because it's definitely a recommend. It's definitely good. Like, overall, I think it's good in that sense. Very entertaining. And again, especially of its time, very practical. It's just nice to see practical battles.
Yeah.
In that sense. And you could tell what was going on. That was nice. You know, it wasn't like chaos.
That's a great point. That's a great point. Because it was there was a lot going on, but it wasn't, you know, super fast cuts or anything that you couldn't keep up with it.
No, you keep what it is. And despite it looking dumb, I think the Scottish people in the Woad and all that made it easy to see who was whom.
Exactly.
Like, you could see, you know, if it were all chainmailed out and you went in there, you can actually see what it was in that sense. But it was so goddamn long. It didn't need to be 3 hours. It was really weird, that battle of Stirling Bridge at the hour and a half mark, leading up to it, really feeling like that could have been an end of a movie.
Totally.
And so, like you said there, a miniseries is what you'd make of it. Or if you just wanted to fucking do something like that, you have two entirely movies. Because at that point right there, it ends with, holy shit, we won. It's on now. And
let's
and you leave it with the conflict and being like, oh shit, where are they going to do? And then you have a whole second movie of his life. So I don't know where to go, because it's long in that sense. I'll go with B. I think I'll go with B. It's a recommend, but like you said, I would never really watch this again. And I don't think I would recommend this to people who aren't interested in it. Like if they had no interest in medieval period or anything like that, then I would say don't bother with it. And if they did, even a passing one, I'd be like, you should watch it if you have even a passing interest in it.
Yeah, I think the big difference for me is I spoke to my mum this afternoon. I spoke to my dad and I told my dad that I watched Braveheart and he was like, oh my God, amazing film. Love that film. Yeah, we watch it all the time. And I said to my mom and she's like, oh no, it's not for me. No. I don't like that stuff. Don't like that stuff at all. So like there's the two different differences of opinions there.
Yeah, it was big time definitely for mid-90s there. But all right, that is it for a Braveheart 1995. Yay. All right. Right after the outro here, we're going to tell you the little detour we are going to take for Brett Day. But Lucy, where can we find you?
Oh, you'll find me at Lucy J. Robin all over the internet playing. I don't know what I'm going to play next, actually. I just finished Mass Effect 2 for the first time ever. And that was probably one of the best gaming experiences I've ever had ever. So, yeah, coming up to Mass Effect 3 soon, but I don't know what I'll do in between.
Mass Effect. I still need to get on those. All right. You can find me at Discord linked below as well. All right. Next week, Oscar month is paused for my birthday. And because it's the milestone year of 40, I'm getting old. And I decided I kind of wanted to do a little pub crawl for my birthday. Called it a little audible on the original movie I was going to do. And we're going to do the last part of the Cornetto trilogy, The World's End.
Yay. Why did I watch this recently? I thought we didn't do it on the podcast already, did we?
No, we didn't.
Okay.
We did Shaun of the Dead. God, if we did we'll re-edit if we had. We did Shaun of the Dead. No, we haven't done this. This is usually everybody's least liked one. Most people will say Shaun of the Dead or Hot Fuzz. And it might be yours also, because I know Hot Fuzz is your favorite.
Yes. Yeah. This is probably my third favorite, but that I don't mean that in a bad way at all. Now, I remember when I first watched At the World's End, I didn't get it and didn't really enjoy it that much. But then because you loved it so much, I watched it more recently, probably like well over a year ago now. And I really did enjoy it the second time. So I'm excited to watch it again. I'm excited to talk about it because, it's definitely a fun film. And I'm obsessed with the Cornetto trilogy and Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Yeah,
we both
definitely are there. I do think it's something that hits people. I think men maybe as well, because it's two guys, it's friends, it's getting older in that sense that hits that. But yeah, we will go through it next week because goddamn, there's a lot to go over. It's fucking not Simon Pegg. It's Edgar Wright's written. Yep. Simon Pegg written, I guess also. They both kind of do it together in that sense. So yeah. Anything they do together, you know, there's going to be a lot behind the scenes and a lot inside of the script and the screenplay in there. So until next week,